You're listening to True White Collar Crime. This is a show about white collar crimes and the crazy criminals behind them. I am Sean McKenna, your host. You can find me on social media at Sean McKenna X. If you are watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe to my channel, Sean McKenna. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave this show a 5-star review and write a little something on there if you would. Let's dive into the episode. Today, we are looking at Elizabeth Holmes. She was born on February 3rd, 1984 to a wealthy family. Her father was a former vice president at Enron. We got some continuity here. We're not just doing 100% segmented episodes. This is a legit show we got going on. Elizabeth studied Chinese at an early age and eventually was accepted to Stanford University. Look at her little smarty pants. She toured China as a part of her time with Stanford and met a businessman named Sonny while she was over there. One of her early business ventures was an attempt to get a patent for a patch that would monitor the health of the user, test their blood, and adjust the amount of medication they were receiving in response to the updated data. That's not a bad idea. I don't blame her for thinking about that. She dropped out of Stanford after her first year. She was going full Gates, full Zuckerberg. She was sending it. She started a company and eventually received a $1 million investment from her neighbor, which that is a good neighbor. Early on, she struggled to convince the healthcare community that her idea was viable in the long term, probably because she didn't know anything about healthcare. She didn't have any medical expertise whatsoever. This didn't slow down her determination at all, though. In the first year she was open for business, she reached $6 million in funding. She also adjusted her business strategy and pivoted toward a product that seemed somewhat more feasible. Her new idea involved a machine that could process blood samples in small quantities. Her vision was to only require a finger prick from patients and to process and send the data to her lab through the internet. This would be a vast improvement on the current process, which required larger quantities of blood to be drawn and samples to be sent to the lab via snail mail. We're talking USPS, or your preferred mail carrier. Her machine was also much smaller than those traditionally used by blood testing facilities, so it was very efficient in terms of space. However, there were several distinct problems with this idea. Blood testing machines were traditionally large for a reason. The complex instruments inside needed to be far apart in order to function properly. Putting these pieces too close together would interfere with the tests. They could heat up or not be able to access the light properly, and the results would be thrown off for all the different tests. Also, large blood samples were needed to get accurate testing done. The small blood samples that Elizabeth dreamed of were not enough to do all the tests that were normally performed during traditional examinations. Theranos proposed diluting the small samples, but this process made the test very inaccurate. You can't just dilute like that and expect everything to be just as accurate. Theranos developed the new and improved Edison machine in 2006. The new machine worked only slightly better than the previous version, but as you can imagine, Theranos hyped it up quite a bit. Elizabeth was able to convince Pfizer to use her machines as part of a test they were doing with cancer patients. Even though she knew the results from her machine were not accurate, she had the Edison machine used to process the blood and return data that doctors use to make real decisions about their patients' care. Doctors traditionally rely heavily on the blood data to make their medical decisions, so inaccurate testing can have extremely serious consequences. Elizabeth fired her CFO in 2006 after he discovered that she had been lying about the performance of the Edison machines. She never really hired another CFO again, as far as I can tell, because she wanted control over the information that was being spread and the books. Her board of directors was absolutely stacked. She got employees and mentors from companies like Apple and Oracle to serve as her advisors. Eventually, she was able to persuade them to restructure the voting rights of the company to give her majority control so she could run the show. Apparently, they decided not to do this at first And then she talked them into it in the next 2 hours. After they voted once, she turned around and talked them back in to giving her that control. That shows what kind of persuasion that this lady had. She had a gift. Elizabeth also idolized Steve Jobs. So weird. This part's so weird. She dressed exactly like him with the black turtleneck, all that jazz. Used several of his business and marketing strategies, which, you know, that makes sense. But it was like in a weird way. She used the same marketing firm, had her marketing meetings on the same day, things like that. She also lowered her voice from its natural tone for some reason, which is kind of creepy. There's a crazy video of her where she's like, yeah, that's so crazy. And then she's like, yeah, when we think about that. And she lowers it back down, like goes into CEO mode to try and keep up this persona that she's, you know, maybe more credible than she thinks she would be otherwise. Which, I don't know, that's a huge red flag for me. In 2009, her now boyfriend, Sonny, who she had met previously in China, call back to that early trip in Stanford. Sonny came to work for Theranos as her second in command. He was notoriously tough to work for and frequently pretended to be a lot more knowledgeable about medical and technology topics than he actually was. Everybody loves that guy, right? I'm sure he was super humble. The next step for Theranos was to approach Walgreens and Safeway about a partnership to do blood testing in their stores. Theranos claimed they could do more than 190 tests on their machines. It was later proven that this was a gross misrepresentation. Saying they could successfully perform even half of these tests would be a very generous characterization. Elizabeth was so persuasive, though, that she secured the bag and got over $100 million in investment between equity and loans from Walgreens and Safeway. That's what I'm talking about. That's big league sales pitches right there. As the relationships developed, Theranos gave Safeway and Walgreens the impression that they were actually doing testing on their Theranos machines. However, they weren't doing this at all. Instead, they used machines from other manufacturers that were already commonly used for testing and would provide the accurate tests they needed. So they were just going out buying machines from other vendors, using those instead. Which, that doesn't seem like it follows the terms of the agreement at all. While all this was going on, Elizabeth's former family friend was suing the company for violation of the patent he had on a method of sending blood sample results over the internet. He was a little disgruntled about the fact that Elizabeth had not included him in her business venture. That's what I researched and that's what came up. Seems weird, but rich people, you know? Theranos continued to use machines purchased from competitors to do the proper blood testing. The company now had a $140 million deal to provide testing services to Walgreens using their Theranos technology, so it was make or break time. Let's go. The terms of the deal stated that they should be up and running by February 2013. The company quickly found themselves 4 months behind on their start date without any answers as to when the machines would be ready for action. The board continued to be stacked with high-profile business and political figures. Elizabeth raised hundreds of millions of additional dollars from people like Rupert Murdoch, the founders of Walmart, and the DeVos family. DeVoe? I'm not sure. Please don't come after me. All of these investments resulted in a huge $9 billion valuation for the company, with Elizabeth's personal net worth estimated at more than half of that number. She a billionaire at this point. You might be wondering how Theranos kept the lid on the secret that their technology didn't really work well. They were able to keep employees who were aware of the shortcomings of their technology quiet with NDAs and the silent threat of legal action should they speak out. Eventually, Tyler Schultz tried to raise the alarm internally with Elizabeth and Sonny. He also spoke to his grandfather, who was a board member at the company. Unfortunately, his grandfather disregarded his concern at the time and did not alert regulators. Elizabeth became a rock star after Fortune wrote an article about her. She was all over the media doing interviews with many major news organizations. She was also appointed to be a part of prestigious organizations such as the Harvard Medical School Board of Fellows. Harvard's like, yeah, get on in here. You seem like you're doing something good. Hillary Clinton's gassing you up, allegedly. At the same time, Richard Fuisz, F-U-I-S-Z, entered the chat again. This was the family friend from before that was playing around with the lawsuit against her. He was gathering information from like-minded Theranos opposers. They found enough evidence to give to the Wall Street Journal. Reporters at the Journal tracked down employees who were willing to risk breaking their NDAs and give anonymous information about Theranos. Theranos caught wind of this and threatened employees who spoke out, but it didn't stop the Wall Street Journal from dropping the article about the company in 2015. An FDA inspection found that Theranos had misrepresented the number of tests that it could complete on its machines instead of the 250-plus tests that were supposed to be completed using the Theranos devices. Only 12 tests could actually be fully completed. Even the 12 tests they could do on the devices did not produce results that were accurate enough for production usage. Ouch, that hurts. Shortly after this, Theranos investors sued the company to reclaim some of the money that they had invested under false pretenses. Although throughout all this, Elizabeth never broke. She literally never broke. She held the line, maintained her story that she did not engage in any deceptive behavior. She was unaware, something like that. Elizabeth and Sonny both face charges currently as a result of their roles at Theranos. The indictments came down in early 2018. Both parties have pleaded not guilty to the charges. The charges come with sentences of up to 20 years in prison. Elizabeth Holmes is scheduled to go on trial in July of 2021. Sonny is slated for trial in January of 2022. Not sure how he managed to swerve trial for an extra 6 months, but thank you for listening. I'm Sean McKenna. Again, this has been True White Collar Crime. If you are watching on YouTube, please like this video. Subscribe to my channel, Sean McKenna. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please give us a 5-star review and write a little something. Could be one word, could be anything. I appreciate you all. We will see you again next week. Thank you very much. You have a great week. Be well. Oh, one more thing. Sources for this episode: there was a Cold Fusion YouTube video, Cold Fusion channel. There's an Australian guy that runs that. Seems like a good dude. Wikipedia had an article about Elizabeth Holmes, which I will link that. Fox News had articles about the trial dates. And also HBO has a documentary called The Inventor: Out for Blood in Silicon Valley. I watched that and it blew my mind. It's a great documentary. I love HBO and their documentaries. Please feel free to go and check that out. Thank you.